This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. Sees if you try.
Feisty freethinkers everywhere, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm friendly neighborhood atheist, Dan Barker.
Free Thought Radio, your weekly antidote to the religious right, is broadcasting and streaming live.
And if you're one of those people, like millions of people in America, who are fed up with the religious right's incursions into our government, into our culture, into our politics, into our lives, then join the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're a national group of atheists and agnostics and skeptics and rationalists who are fighting to keep religion and government separate.
Our guest today will be on the second half of Free Thought Radio, and it's filmmaker Jessica Gerstle, who has made a very timely and very poignant film about her father, a surgeon and athlete, who was recently paralyzed from the neck down. The film is called The Accidental Advocate, and it follows their quest, as they put it, to discover hope in the politicized area of science called Stem Cells, and it's a fascinating film on its own merit. She and her father visit scientists, politicians on both sides of the equation, other stem cell advocates, and they have a fascinating roundtable that we'll hear a little of with clergy. But we invited Jessica to be part of our broadcast today because she is warning that there is a great deal more to be undone than just President Bush's limitations on embryonic stem cell lines.
So stay tuned for the inside scoop on the barriers to stem cell research in America. Now, we want to talk about what's happening with the federal challenge of ministerial Christian prayers and a religious oath at the presidential inauguration, which a lawsuit which Annie Laurie and I are part of, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation is an organizational plaintiff. This is a challenge taken by Michael Newdow and filed a week ago. You'll recall that there are at least 28 other co-plaintiffs suing the inaugural committee, Reverend Rick Warren and Reverend Lowry, and we're suing Chief Justice Roberts, asking to stop the addition of the words, "So help me God," into the secular presidential oath, and to stop prayer to formally begin and end the inauguration.
And the big news is that U.S. District Judge Reggie Walton has found good cause to hear Newdow and our case, and a hearing has been set for next week, Thursday, January 15th. Now, let's listen to some of the TV coverage about this lawsuit. Here's National Fox News, which interviewed Dan last week.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
So help you God.
So help me 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 God, it's happening again. America's most infamous atheists and others are suing to get that phrase yanked from the presidential oath of office before President-elect Barack Obama can utter them in 3 weeks from now. They also want to get the invocation prayer from Pastor Rick Warren yanked as well. Well, this isn't the first time non-believer Michael Newdow has tried to do this kind of thing. He sued to remove religion, if you remember, from both of President Bush's inaugurations. He lost both times. Joining me now is the co-president of one of the organizations filing suit along with him is Dan Barker with the Freedom From Religion Foundation and Peter Sprigg, VP of Policy at the Family Research Council. Peter, go ahead and state your position.
Well, it's Barack Obama's choice to invite these two gentlemen to give the invocation and benediction at his inauguration. If we ever elect an atheist to be president in the United States, then that person would be free to omit any religious references from his or her inaugural ceremonies. It's ludicrous to suggest that this constitutes an establishment of religion simply to have someone pray at his inauguration.
And Dan, you say that if you allow an inaugural prayer, the government is, quote, picking a winner between believers and those who don't believe.
That's right, Kimberly. The
presidential inauguration is not a religious event. It is a secular event. Millions of good non-Christian Americans serve in the government, and we don't believe in a God. We serve in the military, we sit on juries, we teach in the schools. This celebration is a secular celebration for all of us, and we're not challenging Obama's right to free speech. We are challenging the inaugural committee's right to invite Christian ministers in, by the way, which is a new practice. It was not done early in our history. And we're also challenging Chief Justice Roberts for overstepping his authority and inserting the phrase, "So help me God," into the presidential oath, which is in the Constitution. That is un-American, it is unfair, it marginalizes, it makes those of us good Americans who don't believe in God second-class citizens.
Peter, you're saying that they're misconstruing the First Amendment.
Well, exactly. I mean, the First Amendment prohibits an establishment of religion, and it was clearly understood at the time that was adopted that what that meant was the naming of an official national church. Having a simple prayer at an inaugural ceremony doesn't come anywhere close to that. But ironically, if a lawsuit like this were to succeed, we would be, in effect, establishing atheism as the national religion by barring any mention of God or any allusion to religion in any public ceremony.
Well, gentlemen, this is an interesting debate and one that I'm sure we will have many more times, and we'll let the courts decide. Thank you so much.
Well, Mike has to be proud to be called America's most infamous atheist. And quick, Dan, what's a rejoinder on this ridiculous idea that atheism would be established if we don't have religion?
Well, they're mistaking neutrality for hostility. If the government is neutral, then we all benefit. Here's some more coverage by our local ABC TV affiliate here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Obama's inauguration stirring up controversy. A Madison-based organization has filed a lawsuit demanding that any religious aspects at that ceremony, at the swearing-in, be banned. Jeff Angelari spoke with the lawsuit's authors, who believe prayer on the government level at this event is inappropriate.
Carl, the Freedom From Religion Foundation says it's suing on behalf of millions of atheists, agnostics, and free thinkers. And they say history and the Constitution are on their side.
It's a debate bridging our nation's capital and an organization not far from Wisconsin's capital. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is one of 29 plaintiffs trying to get God out of the equation on January 20th.
Less than a third of the presidential inaugurations have had clergy-led prayer. The last 18 out of 57.
The group wants no prayers, no priests in attendance at Barack Obama's inauguration. The swearing-in ceremony is a secular event, they say. Barker believes even the words, "So help me God," should be removed from the oath of office.
All of us Americans love this time. We're celebrating our new president. Millions of us don't believe in God. Millions of us are not Christians.
The lawsuit names Chief Justice John Roberts, who will administer the oath, inauguration chairperson Senator Dianne Feinstein, and the Reverend Rick Warren, who will lead the prayer.
Did you hear me playing the piano on that one?
Ain't necessarily so.
I was playing it Ain't Necessarily So. Now let's change the subject. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has recently placed three billboards saying "Imagine No Religion" in downtown San Francisco, in part as reaction to the vote on Proposition 8, and 10 small billboards throughout Portland, Oregon, as part of our national billboard campaign. But the Brits are giving the foundation a little competition over there in London, where a request to the Freethought community for money to balance religious signs on London buses brought in a whopping $200,000 in U.S. funds to unveil a slogan that says, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." And they're putting up ads on about 800 buses across Britain.
And here's a news clip from via The Guardian. It starts with comedy writer Ariane Shireen, who initiated the campaign. And then we get to listen into a conversation between Richard Dawkins, one of our favorite freethinkers, author of The God Delusion, and Guardian columnist Polly Toynbee, who's just an excellent advocate of reason at The Guardian. They're talking about the bus signs.
This campaign started as a counter-response to adverts which were running on London buses in June 2008, which had Bible quotes on them, for instance, "Jesus died for your sins," and then a URL of a website. And when you visited the website, it said that, among other things, that all non-Christians would burn in hell for all eternity in a lake of fire. And I thought that that was really quite strong and that in 2008, these ideas shouldn't be being spread from the side of a bus. So I thought, why not put a really positive statement out there to say essentially the opposite? I think it's achieved far more than I ever hoped for, really.
I know that you think probably on our bus slogan is a bit soft. On the other hand, I rather like it's upbeat.
I really do.
Let everybody think for themselves.
It's funny, and it gets people to talk about it. And if we'd said there's definitely no God, you can't say that. You can't say there's definitely no Father Christmas. And so it gets people to think.
You and I get accused a lot of being real haters of religion.
Yeah, we're strident and shrill and things. Isn't it amazing that if you say the mildest thing against religion, it's automatically strident? Have you ever noticed that?
It's strident, it's offensive, people are outraged and offended. And I think what's good about this campaign is that nobody could call it offensive.
No.
I get offended when they accuse us of being soulless, spiritless, emotionless, dry rationalists, and brutal haters.
Yes.
I'm very offended. But on the other hand, I don't expect them to respect my offence. I expect my...
You stand up for yourself.
Stand up for myself.
Exactly, yes.
Why can't they? Why do they need special...
Because they've got nothing really to stand up for. They've got nothing, they've got no decent arguments, so they have to take offence. It's the only weapon they've got.
That's Richard Dawkins talking with Polly Toynbee about the bus signs on buses in London. Now, on this side of the Atlantic, the Freedom From Religion Foundation will have more announcements early this year on our campaign to bring free thought messages to the American mainstream.
And boy, the American mainstream needs it more than the British.
And we're going to be using, as before, billboards and the plan is to go on to subway ads. Boy, we'd really be bowled over if we could raise $200,000 like they did in London for such a campaign here at home. But we do need support for this outreach in our radio show, and you can get more information about joining the Freedom From Religion Foundation and donating to support our efforts online at ffrf.org.
We'll be talking with filmmaker Jessica Gerstle about stem cell research, how the embargo on embryonic stem cell lines affects real people, including her surgeon father, and what needs to be undone by the Obama administration to really make this research blossom in the United States.
And coming up first, we'll look at this crazy idea that politicians, even in America today, are anointed by God.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
This is the church. This is the steeple. Open the doors. Get in there, you atheist.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We've been talking about the Freedom From Religion Foundation's important legal challenge with 28 other plaintiffs and Michael Newdow of Ministerial Prayer and the addition of religion to the presidential oath. And it's just so unseemly, Dan, that it harkens back to the monarchs who thought they were God's anointed to bring religion into a secular inauguration.
And as we all know, Roland W. Burris was appointed by Illinois Governor Blagojevich. Is that how you say it?
I think so.
Blagojevich. And the Democrats have refused to seat him since the governor is under indictment for trying to sell that seat. One can feel sorry for Burris. He's caught in the middle of this, but he's also an odd character. He put up a mausoleum to himself, before his death, and in a church he made this statement. He said, "We are hoping and praying that they will not be able to deny what the Lord has ordained."
Over his appointment.
Yeah. Here's John Stewart's take on the Burris anointment.
Now, obviously, this gentleman seems slightly egotistical, but over the weekend at his church in Chicago, Captain Funkadunk showed off his more humble side.
I had the opportunity when the Lord put his hands on the governor and said, "This is the person that has to go to Washington."
God told Blagojevich specifically. Actually, I believe a picture of that meeting is on the ceiling of Burris's mausoleum. Yes, I believe that's it.
Version of Michelangelo. And this reminds me of one of my favorite folk songs. It's an 18th century ballad repopularized in the 1950s by Richard Dyer Bennett called The Vicar of Bray. And I asked Dan to, what, 20 years ago?
Or 22 years ago?
To do a new recording of it. And it's lampooning religio, political opportunism, and this idea of God anointing rulers. So it's very timely.
In good King Charles's golden days, when loyalty no harm meant, a zealous high churchman was I, and so I gained preferment. To teach my flock I never missed, kings were by God appointed, and damned are those who dare resist or touch the Lord's anointed. And this is law that I'll maintain until my dying day, sir, that whatsoever king shall reign, still I'll be the Vicar of Bray, sir. When royal James possessed the crown and popery came in fashion, the penal laws I hooted down and read the Declaration. The Church of Rome I found it fit full well my constitution, and I had been a Jesuit but for the Revolution. And this is law that I'll maintain until my dying day, sir, that whatsoever king shall reign, still I'll be the Vicar of Bray, sir. When royal Anne became our queen, the Church of England's glory.
Well, we can hear he goes on and on. Religious political opportunism. It hasn't changed. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk about the religious war against stem cell research in the United States.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're back with the second half of Free Thought Radio.
Our guest today is producer-director Jessica Gerstel, who covered breaking news stories for NBC News and produced hour-long specials for Dateline NBC for 12 years before she left to independently produce her first film, The Accidental Advocate. Her investigative hour, Justice for Shannon, uncovered corruption in the sex crimes unit of the Philadelphia Police Department. She won an Emmy for her segment, An Ounce of Prevention, about violence prevention programs for adolescents in the wake of the school shootings in Kentucky and Colorado. Jessica Gerstel has always had a particular interest in medical stories. She earned her bachelor's degree from Barnard College in history. The Accidental Advocate, her new film, premiered during the 2008 Republican and Democratic conventions as part of the Impact Film Festival.
And I was lucky enough to catch the Madison, Wisconsin premiere of The Accidental Advocate last month. And Jessica and her father call it a wheelchair odyssey because he's in a wheelchair, a father and daughter odyssey as they track down the thinkers and politicians and crusaders and naysayers on stem cell research. And it's a quest to understand both the potential of the science and why there is a political religious quagmire stalling a cure. So welcome very much to Free Thought Radio, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on a great documentary.
Thank you. And it was nice to have you get to see it at the 10-year celebration for Jamie Thompson's work.
That's right. Madison has been quite a hub. I thought maybe you could tell a little bit about your dad and how this film started.
Sure. My dad was an ophthalmologist and a surgeon and also a hyper-athletic guy. He was always out biking or running. In the winter, he was skiing. We come from a very active family. And one day in August, when he was on mile 56 of a 60-mile bike ride, he just had a simple accident that resulted in a very high spinal cord injury that left him paralyzed from the neck down. And in the wake of that, my family was asked a lot of questions. You know, had we heard about cures abroad or, you know, the potential to fix his damaged spinal cord with stem cells? I think Christopher Reeve sort of put stem cells out there as a future therapy for people who are spinal cord injured. And as a journalist, I pride myself on being able to know the answers to everything, and also as a daughter who just wanted to know that if there was something out there that could help my dad, I'd, you know, find it. I did a lot of research, and my dad's a doctor, and we realized how hard it is to get to the truth about where the science is and what the science is, and we decided to do this documentary together.
And I think it started partly because your dad was making use of computer software so he could do research online.
Absolutely. I mean, we were fortunate that my dad did not have any brain damage. And while his life is very different now, as he says, when you have your mind, you know, there's lots of possibilities. And he's always had a strong intellectual curiosity about medicine and not just about ophthalmology, but all types of science and research. And so this was a wonderful way to employ him.
Now, you went to Washington, D.C., but you did find your way to where we are, Madison, Wisconsin, because, of course, James Thompson, Jamie Thompson, is here. And there's footage of you arriving at the Dane County Airport and seeing the stem cell labs here.
Yeah, Madison, Wisconsin is where you have to start the story in terms of human embryonic stem cell research. It was in 1998 when Jamie Thompson derived the first human embryonic stem cell line that it sort of reopened the debate over the moral status of an embryo and the extent to which federal policy and federal research dollars were going to be available for research that involved cells within an embryo.
And remind me of the timeline. When did Bush first get involved in?
Well, you know, it's really part of a longer timeline. There's, you know, really in the wake of Roe v. Wade, we sort of enshrined into law this idea that a fertilized egg is a human life. And so when you have the advent of IVF technology in the late 70s and the birth of baby Louise, we had to look at, the policies regarding fertility treatments. And to this day, the federal government is not permitted to use any federal dollars that researches, well, the term is that harms or tampers an embryo. So if you know anyone who's had fertility issues, they've gone to private clinics and had to use personal money to seek those fertility treatments.
So that's religion. There's one of the harms of religion right now, religious opposition to that kind of research.
Well, I think when people talk about the controversy and getting to the heart of the controversy over embryonic stem cell research, a lot of it is predicated on a religious viewpoint.
The idea that a fertilized egg is equivalent to a human being.
Right.
And since we were talking about Madison, Wisconsin, we have a clip of Alto Charo, who's the UW, the University of Wisconsin, ethicist.
Bioethicist. She actually, I don't have her bio right in front of me, but I think she was part of a 1994 commission that President Clinton had, I think it was through the NIH, they were asked to come back with a report on human embryo research and the extent to which the federal government could do research that they thought would benefit society.
And Alto Charo is on the transition team.
And she was on that commission, and now, yes, she's on the transition team.
So this is from your film, The Accidental Advocate.
I think we should start by recognizing that everything's a gamble. Research is a gamble. We don't know if embryonic stem cell research or cloning research is going to become the key to the 21st century medical revolution in regenerative medicine, or if it'll turn out to be a dead end. We don't know if adult stem cells will turn out to have any significant potential for clinical use, or if it'll only have very limited use in a very limited range of diseases. We don't know whether cord blood from umbilical cords can be used instead of embryonic stem cells. We don't know anything at this point, except that our best chances come with pursuing every avenue of research and pursuing every hope as aggressively as possible.
Now, that's Alto Charo, and she's just one of a kind of a star-studded cast that you have in this documentary, The Accidental Advocate. Who else did you and your dad meet?
I mean, we talked to politicians on both sides of the issue and the aisle. I mean, Orrin Hatch very much promotes and supports all forms of embryonic stem cell research. He's a Republican. We also spoke with Senator Casey, who is a Democrat and has voted against expanding federal funding for embryonic stem cell research.
He's a Roman Catholic.
And he's a Roman Catholic.
And you talked with
Arnold Schwarzenegger. We talked to scientists, theologians, other patients, who hope that one day there will be a potential for cures.
And shall we listen to the Religious Roundtable? This is just a really short clip, and there's actually it sort of segues to Senator Brownback. But
it starts
with the priest.
I was an embryo. You were an embryo. Right. As a former embryo myself, I have strong opinions about how they should be treated.
We talk about when we say human being.
Not zebra, not plant.
Mother Teresa was once a human embryo. You destroy the embryo, you don't get the full-scale person.
Political considerations are limiting the investments of our federal government in this burgeoning area of stem cell research.
So he heard, that is the most ridiculous quote.
Well, I was a sperm, and you were a sperm, and we were all sperm at one time. So that argument is so specious.
So what I want to sort of address, and I think it's combined in both what Alto Charo says and that little clip, which ended on a soundbite from Dr. George Daly, who's at Boston Children's Hospital. Scientists don't have an argument over whether or not to use adult or embryonic or any other kind of cell. They want to look at all cell types. And because all types of cells start from embryonic stem cells, they feel like that is still the gold standard for them. And there will always be a need to do research, basic scientific research, with embryonic stem cells. And so all of the rhetoric that you hear that there's other cell types that make embryonic stem cell research moot doesn't really hold scientific water.
Because why exclude such a promising avenue?
And what Alto Charo says, this may lead to cures and it may not. But that doesn't mean it's not, really valid research. And the argument that Senator Brownback is making that, there's a direct connection between, every embryo is a human being, just isn't the case. When people go through fertility treatments, they may be able to create, several embryos, only implant some of them, and those frozen embryos are going to be incinerated if they're not donated to science or donated to another couple who might be able to use the embryo for an implantation. But, it's not a one-to-one ratio.
Now, when we come back, I want to talk about all the things that need to be undone still by the upcoming Obama administration. It's not going to be easy. And we're talking about the future of stem cell research in the United States with filmmaker Jessica Gerstel, who has directed a film about science, about ethics, about family called The Accidental Advocate. And Free Thought Radio will be right back.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
And we're back with the conclusion of the show. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And our guest is Jessica Gerstel. It's spelled G-E-R-S-T-L-E. Jessica Gerstel, who left a career at Dateline to do a film called The Accidental Advocate. She calls it a wheelchair odyssey of father and daughter, a quest to get to the bottom of stem cell research and its potential and what is holding everything up.
Now, during the break, Jessica, we were talking briefly, and you said that it's so hard to see people conflating morality as religion.
I mean, I think that's what I've learned. You know, we really do need this antidote to the political rhetoric that confuses people about the research. You know, I fully respect someone's religious opposition to the research, but when they conflate science and religion and claim that it's on scientific grounds, that's being disingenuous, and it doesn't help for an informed debate about the issue.
And really, when you look at Bush's two vetoes on stem cell research, who was he kowtowing to? It was the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, even a Mormon like Orrin Hatch has conceded on this. Even Nancy Reagan has chimed in for stem cell research. 70% of Americans or more support it. So it seems like it's the Roman Catholic Conference here that he is trying to placate. Doesn't it seem like it? I mean, that's...
Oh, and the evangelicals.
And some of the evangelicals.
And the Mormons.
But I don't think the Mormons, I don't think, have come out with a policy, a statement, on the research. Listen, nobody would deny that something incredible does happen when an egg is fertilized and goes through the process that eventually becomes, a person. But, when we're talking about something that's happening outside of a woman in her womb, and these are cells that, as I said, are human cells, but to try to attach, self-awareness and personhood to that is something else and something that we need to look at a little bit more closely.
Something
when we weigh in on this issue.
Something that it takes faith to do. I mean, it isn't a fact. So that's what people are failing to distinguish. I did want to say that when you were at the premiere in Madison, you were giving a little pitch about all of the things and in the film as well that have to be undone. It isn't just going to be one fell swoop for new President Barack Obama to undo all the harm. Isn't that right?
Well, I think we can be optimistic that, all of these pledges by both President-elect Obama and Congress will probably quickly roll back the Bush restrictions. But as we talked about a little earlier in the program, there is a, there's stuff on the books for 30 years that don't allow all forms of the research that scientists, that would take the handcuffs off scientists. So they could really move forward as quickly as possible. The Bush restrictions allow for research to be done on existing stem cell lines. They don't allow for the derivation of stem cell lines. They don't allow for something called therapeutic cloning. And, for scientists to be able to answer all of the questions that they're trying to answer, what makes a cell live and die? What makes it differentiate? What makes it grow out of control and become cancer? They need to have more flexibility to go the places that they feel they need to go for these answers.
And that therapeutic cloning is going to be the hot one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, we have so much to deal with in this country right now. I don't know when we'll sort of tackle that issue, because for some that is the quote-unquote creation of life, though that's not the way scientists see it. But the truth is, the new iPS cells, the induced pluripotent stem cells, where you're able to take a cell and inject genes to kind of reset the cell's machinery and have it act like an embryonic stem cell, we scientists were led to that kind of recipe for how to do that because of therapeutic cloning. So, science is incremental, and things take time, and people need to be a little bit more aware of that.
Now, I did want to ask, how is your father doing these days?
My dad is great. I'm, very fortunate that he has so many hobbies and passions that keep him active. He's a very busy bridge player. He's very active with MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he went to school, and still works as to help with alumni services. And, he gets calls all the time with medical questions. He still loves being a doctor.
The title of your film, The Accidental Advocate, is a wonderful title. The tragedy of your dad's accident, which accidentally led to the advocacy. There's some screenings coming up of the movie around the country. Do you have that, Annie Laurie?
Yeah, let's see. We have next week, starting Monday through the end of the week, in different cities, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, Baltimore, Maryland on the 14th, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Chicago, Detroit, Minneapolis, New York City, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Denver. And people can find out more about the details of where to go for that screening at your website. What is that, Jennifer? What is that, Jessica?
Oh, the website is www.theaccidentaladvocate.com.
Well, thank you so much.
We've been talking with Jessica Gerstle, director of The Accidental Advocate. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our producer and engineer, Brian Turani. We're out of time now. Listen to these shows at ffrf.org/radio as an archive or as a podcast.
And thanks to Jessica Gerstle for joining us and you for listening. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.